listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hey guys, we're going to call a bit of an audible this week for the Miles to Go podcast. My voice has been uncooperative while I've been under the weather, so we haven't had a ton of time for new recordings. As you can imagine, having a working voice is pretty important for podcasting. So we picked out two segments that are some of my favorites from our first year of episodes, including a great segment with Richard Kerr about what he would change in the world of travel if it was up to him. And also a segment with Stefan Krasowski on how to do a safari with your family for essentially $100 a day, which definitely puts Africa front and center on my bucket list now that I realize it won't cost me tens of thousands of dollars. We've also got a brand new segment with Jen from Deals We Like talking about a credit card that might need to find its way into your wallet for 2019. And I certainly promise or certainly hope that my voice will be 100% back to normal for next week for everybody, and that we'll have a brand new show of all new segments. Thanks again. Enjoy the show. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. We're still recording from Zorkfest here, and we're peering out through the Treasure Island pool party. So you may hear the music in the background, and from a people watching standpoint, it doesn't get more epic or bizarre than this. My guest, Richard Kerr from Award Travel 101, is laughing uncontrollably and trying not to look out the windows and focus on the topic at hand. How you doing, Richard?
It doesn't get any better than this, I'll tell you what.
It is pretty legendary. So we wanted to catch up for a few minutes before you and I both head out of town. You wrote a blog post just about a month ago, and I hope we can get through all of it. If we don't, we'll certainly link to it in the show notes so people can read through it. But you talked about something in a bunch of different loyalty programs that you want to change. So you highlighted some things that you think are key benefits they could change or key rules that they could change that would make it better for folks like us who collect miles and points.
Yeah, definitely. After you are involved with these programs on a daily basis, either on the phone, either on the websites, at the airport with agents, there's just certain things. This is just an epic party going on. But there are certain things that you want changed. If there's just one little thing that makes my eye twitch every single day I could change, I listed them out here on the critical points, my new column on the points guy.
Yeah, and I love some of these. So let's get right into it, starting with Alaska Airlines.
That daggum award calendar, man. They need to make it delineate when it's a mixed cabin result and when it is all first class. So not so much for you and me, but for some of the listeners who aren't as familiar with this, when they go and plan their vacation and they go to the award calendar search and it says, hey, look, almost every single day has first class space down to Australia. Well, you and I know that it's going to be coach on the long haul.
Yep.
But they don't know that, and they might go run in the kitchen and tell husband, hey, look, we got to pick from these days. It's good to go. Little do they know, they go through the next search result, and they're going to be flying long haul wide. So Alaska, delineate that calendar to let me know when it's mixed cabin results.
And certainly we hope they don't go ahead and book it mistakenly, but I'm sure there are some people that do.
You know, Alaska does have a couple warnings on there, but people get excited when they see first class to Australia, and they can click through before they know what's going on and be very disappointed.
Yeah, I agree. So let's move on to an airline that was near and dear to my heart for a number of years, still is, American Airlines.
I had a great pleasure of being executive platinum for the last year and a half. I'm now back in Atlanta, so I'm a Delta guy now.
Yeah.
But America needs to give us something to get excited about. I'm not excited about no stopovers. I'm not excited about, open jaws are gone. I'm not excited about the limitations on what regions I can transit, even if they make geographic sense and get charged two awards. There's just nothing there that's going to make me really get excited or passionate about the American Airlines program right now. They need to do something.
Yeah, I agree with both them and United. I think that, you certainly got the excursionist perk with United, but I think both American and United have made it harder to book fun awards, if you will.
Or common sense awards in some
places.
Yeah,
I see a lot of that in United, and certainly we may get to that a little bit later. But I find with some of the new United stuff that I wrote about this the other day, Philadelphia to Orlando in the middle of July on a weekday, and the cheapest award seat is 50,000 miles in coach.
It sounds great to me.
It sounds wonderful, and somebody's actually booking that.
I know they are, man.
All right, back to your new primary airline, Delta.
Yeah. You know what? I go on a bit of a rant here, but yeah, I don't care what it looks like. I don't care if it's ugly. I don't care if it's got a band of 50,000 miles. You've got to set prices on what you're selling. Delta's got to give us an award chart of any shape or form so that we have expectations and so that customers who are buying their product will have expectations of what it's going to take. There are the American Airlines card hawkers in the Atlanta terminals now selling 3 to 4 round trips for a sign-up bonus. They're not saying the number of miles that you're going to get. They're saying you're going to get – this is enough for 2 round trips. And I'm like, well, how do you know? Prove it to me.
Yeah,
and
right.
I have to stop myself from talking to these people to say, you have no idea what it's going to cost. So likelihood of this happening, 0.01%. But Delta, tell your customers what your product costs.
Yeah, I agree. If you're going to sell the credit card as being able to get X number of round trips, you kind of need to tell us some barometer what that is.
Anything.
All right. How about Etihad?
Only one thing.
Yeah, it's exactly what you say in your post.
Yep. No, let's Etihad get your game together. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
All right. So Hilton Hotels. I thought this was an interesting one that you added here, especially given the Hilton's lack of desire to give people suites for the most part.
Right, so I think they've got to look at their competition coming up here in August. Marriott and SPG are going to make it pretty clear that elites are keeping suite upgrades. And
yeah.
If I'm a businessman or a businesswoman and I've got a family that's going to travel for leisure and I'm taking all of these points and the status to make sure my family vacation is going to be great, suites are a big part of that. I've got a 1 and a 3-year-old and I'll do anything I can to get in a suite so that my night's not over at 6:45 when the kids go to bed. I've got a hard time looking at Hilton for family vacations because there's just no viable way to make sure that I'm going to get into a suite when your competition is making that feasible. Now, some people might have other reasons for wanting those suites. Some people just want them because they have a suite. Some people, the motivations differ. But if you're going to incentivize people to come and become a diamond over a platinum premier or over a globalist, You've got to give them an avenue to suites, and I would love Hilton to take advantage of this opportunity during transition time and get their base excited and give top-tier elites an avenue to suites.
Yeah, I agree, and I think, it's, as you mentioned, it's really important for families. Not that it isn't important for someone else, but we're looking at if we want the sort of space that we need for our kids to be able to relax while we can continue to have a drink of wine or catch up on emails or whatever, trying to do all that in one hotel room with one bathroom is tough. And so we're either redeeming double the amount of points or we're hoping for some opportunity to suite, which other chains, admittedly, I didn't think Marriott was going to do that with the with the merger, but other chains are offering it. It's something that Hyatt certainly done for a while, and that's a good transition to Hyatt was next up on your list for is my favorite hotel program, but you picked up on what's probably my pet peeve with them.
Yeah, definitely a Hyatt guy through and through. They provided incredible value on a weekly basis for me, traveling full-time now, doing this and for my family. But had an interesting conversation with their VP of loyalty, and my main concern was you got to stop this manipulation of award availability.
Yeah.
It actually started. So we had the Aruba property, who was not playing very nice recently.
Yep.
We've got some properties putting unwritten minimum stays into making award availability show up. You've got properties manipulating a king view room versus a king room being standard when they're in the exact same cotton picking room.
Andaz Maui was a big abuser of room type.
And if you broadcast no blackout dates of a standard room's available, you got to clean up your act a little bit here and make sure I know when I can use points and when I can't.
Yeah, no blackout dates should really mean no blackout dates.
Yeah, that's so across how many different programs now where it says no blackout dates. And people are like, well, if they have a room, if they have a flight, it says no blackout dates. I'm like, that's a little asterisk footnote. Welcome to America 2018, right? So,
all right, how about IHG?
You got to make that free annual cert good for any property.
Yeah, I agree.
You have to. Yeah, that's what you sold folks on for the last number of years.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back.
How about JetBlue and partner redemptions?
They've got a really interesting model going on right now. I'm very excited about JetBlue. They just added 3 new routes to the Atlanta airport, so I've got an opportunity to fly them. There's all this talk about maybe going to Europe with the new 321neo acquisitions. If you're going to do that and you're going to make your program robust, you've got to open up some of your partner redemptions. So they're kind of one of these quasi, we're not going to join an alliance, but we're kind of making our own little deal here with Emirates and Hawaiian. And what is it, Iceland Air?
Yeah.
But you can only redeem JetBlue miles for Hawaiian. You can't do anything with the other partners, and I think they're going to add some more as they – it looks like pretty solid expand the international route network. So let's make it a full-on fledged, you know, Etihad or Emirates situation where you got these reciprocal benefits and you've got the ability to use points across them. So I would love JetBlue to open up other partners besides Hawaiian to redeem in True Blue points on at rates that are attractive to their consumers.
Sure, and that was, you know, somewhere where Alaska used to excel in that area, where they had a number of good places you could redeem for partners. And, you know, JetBlue and Alaska, even though they may have different ways to get there, sort of end up at the same finish line of, like, the little airline that could. And,
right.
You know, certainly would like to see JetBlue fold that stuff in. your comment about Marriott, what you changed with Marriott in your post is very topical for me in that, you know, the second credit card I ever had in the loyalty world, maybe third, was the Starwood Preferred Guest America Express card. And so you key on something about spending with the new cards. It's definitely concerning.
Right. August 1st, that card loses 33% of its value on the majority of everyday spend.
Yeah.
How can you continue to market a product that's now worth a third less?
Yeah.
I don't understand what they're thinking here. Typically, when companies undervalue their products, the consumers will follow with it and seeing it. And let's bring it back to earning 3 points per dollar on non-bonus spend.
Yeah, and I think the killer there is we know that – well, no is maybe just a tad strong. We are 98% sure that a lot of hotels are going to get more expensive from a point standpoint. It's going to cost more points in 2019 and beyond to redeem for a lot of these properties that we want to stay at. And what we're saying is one of the cards that's been the most meaningful part of the SPG world is going to earn a lot less points and cost a lot more for those key redemptions.
It's, I'm not sure. I think they did it. I was very pleased with the announcements of the merger details, but this was the one place where they whiffed. They stood on the tee box. They took that big driver out, and they completely whiffed.
Yeah. What about Southwest?
Extend the booking schedule. I can't set my alarm to be there every 3 months when Southwest opens it up.
Yeah.
I understand that their non-spoken hub makes it difficult from an operational challenge to get these aircraft in the right place at the right time. But as a traveling business person now, hey, I love Southwest. My family flies Southwest, Companion Pass, all that good stuff. But if I've got to book a flight for next summer, I got to go to a legacy carrier whose schedule is already open so I can get that in the calendar. Even if there are going to be schedule changes, the vast majority of the time they're not going to be more than an hour or so. And I can get it on the calendar, I can get it paid for, I can get it budgeted for, I can get the points redeemed, and Southwest is just not an option for that right now.
No, I get that. And I would tend to agree with you. If I was going to play devil's advocate on it, I'd say I see very few schedule changes when I book a Southwest flight. And it is at least comforting that when they do release the schedule, it's pretty darn accurate.
Yeah.
You comment on Spirit, which I think is interesting in that I started to fly Spirit a little bit more recently. And I definitely will now that they're going to be rolling out Wi-Fi, because
right.
Probably one of my biggest peeves is, you know, having to be disconnected for a 3 or 4 hour flight. So I'll fly them on shorter flights. I've never really thought of Spirit as an airline that I would collect points on, so I was interested to see your take here.
Yeah. If you don't have any activity for 90 days, those points are gone. 90 days is some people fly once a year. If you're going to even have a loyalty program, you've got to give people more than 90 days to be able to use these things. I had my first Spirit experience last year, flew them from Atlanta to Chicago, had an $8 what is that awful pre-mix cocktail they sell in the little spheres?
Yeah,
that was terrible. But the flight was great, man.
I
ended up paying like $60 all in for the big comfy seat.
Yep.
But if I'm going to fly this thing and you're going to market a loyalty program, then I need more than 90 days.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I look at that, and I can't disagree with anything you said. I guess I just think of Spirit as an airline that doesn't have a loyalty program.
Right, so that's why I just get rid of it then.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if we're not going to do it.
Yeah, or give me like a candy bar on the way off the plane, like Lufthansa does on CityLine flights.
I think you might get one peanut instead of Spirit points. I wish it was worth a candy bar. But.
All right, last, I'm not sure if it's least on our list, United Mileage Plus.
There's a couple things that really grind my gears with these airlines, and a close-in ticketing fee is one of these. $75 to use my miles more than or less than 21 days in advance. It doesn't cost United a single penny more to ticket this thing. It's just a penalty to drive ancillary revenue and stick it to the American public one more time. Let's get rid of that thing. And as I understand it, all the tricks now to avoid this fee are completely gone. So unless you've got that status, you're paying $75 on top of a free flight that they market, right? So let's get rid of this close-in ticketing fee. Give me a break.
Yeah, if you had to go that route, if you have to fly United, then you've got to think about using some other currency to get around the 21-day fee. And for what it's worth, I understand that most people don't think this way, but 21 days isn't necessarily close in. In the business sense, there certainly are times where I'll redeem miles within 21 days because I have a pop-up trip. On the flip side, for folks that collect miles and are looking to defray some of the largest costs, if they have a family member who's ill or, you know, some sort of an emergency that's coming up within 21 days, they've been saving those points for that emergency, and they're probably paying more in total points for the ticket because it's close in. And then on top of, you know, maybe instead of taking, you know, 12,500 miles one way for that flight on United, they're charging you 32,500, which is the new version of 25,000. On top of the 32,500, then they're charging you $75. It just feels like a pretty large penalty.
At least if you're going to book multiple tickets on the same PNR, charge me $75 once, not per ticket.
Sure.
I mean, like, come on. Let's get rid of this thing.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, it's a pretty full list, and I'll be honest, I agree with most of them. I don't think we're going to see a lot of changes here. The airlines and the hotels feel pretty set in their ways on how they think they're delivering on benefits. I think if there was one that I could pick off the list, I think is maybe more likely to happen than the others would be Hilton deciding to change their mind and give that path to suites.
I would take any of them at this point, but yeah, 0.01% chance we see any of these things go.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what the Hilton franchise agreements look like to see if they have the juice to be able to do it, but if there was a path out of these, that's probably the one I see most likely. I certainly don't see United eliminating their fee anytime soon. They really like their fees.
The only thing free is the free money they get from the American public for these fees. Yeah,
I agree. All right, well, Richard, thanks so much for being on. I'm glad that we were able to share this Treasure Island Real Housewives pool party excitement in the background while we are listening. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not enjoying your time at TI at Zorkfest.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm really sad that I missed this in my 20s over here at the Treasure Island. It's really great. You can find me anytime at the Award Travel 101 Facebook group. A lot of fun interacting 24/7 over there. And as always, I write about 3 or 4 times a week now on the Points Guy, where you can always find my articles.
There you have it, guys. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. While we're taking a break from the show, I wanted to share a new piece of my travel gear that's a perfect fit for me. I'm always looking for ways to travel lighter. I hate checking a bag. When it gets cold out, that can be quite a challenge. I have a bunch of cold weather destinations that I visit on a yearly basis. And taking a 5-day business trip to Edmonton in January means my carry-on starts to burst at the seams with sweaters and other warm clothing. I've been hunting for a vest to travel with, and I think I found the perfect one. Bluffworks released a vest a few months ago that I just received in the mail, and I've worn it out on a couple of test trips, and I'm definitely ready to say it's warm and it's lightweight, which is table stakes for any gear that I travel with. The vest also has 7 pockets, which means I can keep my phone and my passport and headphones and all the other necessities right where I need them. Bluffworks has a complete line of clothing that's geared towards travelers. Zippered pockets right where you need them to keep things like passports safe, easy to wash without crazy special instructions, because I'm pretty bad at washing stuff, and they come out of your suitcase looking good. Check out the full line of gear at bluffworks.com. That's BLUFFworks.com. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. We're going to tackle something new, something that's even been aspirational for me that I haven't gotten to yet. Definitely still on my bucket list. And let's just picture all of us in a classroom somewhere right now. I'm going to ask everybody to raise their hands if they want to go on an African safari. And in this imaginary classroom, I can see everybody's hands going up because I would imagine this is on most people's bucket lists. Now, how many of you are planning one of those trips? And I can see a whole bunch of hands coming down. I've got Stefan Krasowski on with me from Rapid Travel Chai. He's got a ton of experience traveling internationally. And what he woke me up to very quickly was that these trips don't have to break the bank. And that was what really dialed me in on wanting to do the segment is – you know, we want to provide these incredible experiences for our children. I want them to see a safari that's, you know, way beyond what they can catch at Disney World in Florida, even though that's a lot of fun. He's going to talk to us today about how to do that for amounts of money that you may be surprised to hear. Stefan, thanks for being on Miles to Go with me.
My pleasure.
So Let's walk through the pieces here. First and foremost, if you have miles and points, it's best to think about trying to use that for the airfare to get you to Africa, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, where's a good starting jumping off point, do you think, to frame up one of these trips? Where are we trying to get to using our miles and points?
When you're looking family friendly and budget friendly, it's the far southern African country. So
okay.
South Africa has the most air service and options. Namibia is the one I'll pick as my top pick, and they have various services from Europe, as well as Qatar flies out of Doha on a relatively new service. And then maybe more secondary airports, but connecting up to get to Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, or Livingstone, Zambia, makes a lot of like Chobe National Park in Botswana available, as well as other areas of Botswana that you could fly into. And those three countries all have tremendous family-friendly safari value.
Yeah, and for those collecting miles and points, the things that pop into my mind of ways to get there, I'll use, you know, Dulles at my headquarters, you know, here in D.C. You know, you've got British Airways, Lufthansa, South African Airways, and Qatar, which would all be ways to get you there fairly efficiently. That are all things that you could probably reasonably redeem miles on. You know, once we're there, walk folks through, as you walk me through, what you would see an ideal day, and you know what that might cost someone if they weren't necessarily trying to break the bank, but they weren't trying to find the cheapest path possible.
Absolutely. So you want to look for parks that ideally allow self-drive,
mm-hmm.
And they'll often have guided drives, half-day, full-day safaris that you can take to have that expert. But when they allow self-drive, like many of the parks in these countries, that constrains the cost quite a bit. You want to rent. It's in most of Africa, the standard is a Toyota Land Cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
That's the vehicle of choice. You'll see all over. Everybody knows how to repair it, and you'll rent one of these. So you're looking at, in most cases, somewhere around $50 to $100 a day for a vehicle.
Right.
Park permits, and one reason I didn't necessarily highlight, say, Kenya and Tanzania for this kind of family trip is the park permits in those countries tend to be much more expensive than say Namibia, South Africa, Botswana, where the park permits might be $20 or $30 a day for an adult.
And that's very reasonable.
Significantly more. So if you're able to self-drive, if you're able to have reasonable park permits, and then you're looking for ones that, for instance, Etosha National Park in Namibia. It's about a 4 to 5 hour drive north of Windhoek. It allows self-drive, and all the lodges in the park are government run.
Uh-huh.
So you can stay in the park, full comfort level, swimming pool outside, full bath, you know, restaurants, for around $200 to $250 a night, which by safari standards
is incredibly reasonable,
but also you can drive outside of the gates, and there's any number of family-run guest houses that are very comfortable. It's typically German families,
mm-hmm.
and these can be $30 to $50 a night for a double room. And the only difference being that you're outside the park, so you're commuting back in and out, which, you know, so it's a half an hour drive
sure.
back and forth, but a substantial savings. So you could spend several nights outside the park and maybe splash out for a night
yeah.
truly in the park and take advantage of a night safari.
So what does a day look like? Are you setting out? You'd mentioned that there are some water options as well, but what do you think a day looks like when you head out for your safari?
Generally, especially when you're talking about kids, but anybody that wilts under the sun, you're looking at getting up early and seeing things out in the morning before the midday heat,
right.
when animals may be out and active. You're driving around looking for watering holes. You find information at your lodge or from rangers where animals are likely to be active at that time. And then middle of the day, you're usually chilling out. Now, it's counterintuitive, but you want to be in most of these destinations in the driest, hottest time of year, because that's when all the scrub brush, the leaves, all of that is eaten way down.
Okay.
So almost drought conditions are perfect for spotting animals, because when it's the rainy
that
season, it's lush, you're not going to see. So when I went to Etosha, I didn't realize that at first. It was like everything is like, you know, dead. It's like, you know, the leaves off the trees thing, but that's the perfect time.
Right.
Because these animals, it is amazing how well they camouflage. So when you're in that kind of heat, the middle of the day, the animals are not out. You're going to want your kids resting cool.
Right.
And then back in the evening, there'll be evening drive you can take, or evening drives with your lodge, and maybe even a night safari option.
And would you, in these sorts of situations, would you recommend having a guide with you?
In all the parks, there are rangers available on demand and mm-hmm. also lodge run things. So rather than booking an entire package, you book ones that you want. So they'll have a morning drive, a two-hour morning game drive with, mm-hmm. with a ranger, whatever that costs, $40 a person, let's say.
Right.
You take that one, and if you really like that experience compared to your self-drive, then you book an afternoon one. And it's really flexible in almost all cases to be able to do this and just pick up what you like, what you're feeling like. And I think about safari, not everybody takes to it that well because the animals are spectacular, but it also involves, again, we're talking about very hot settings typically.
Sure.
And riding around in an SUV. If you're on a group tour like these lodge drives, it's usually an open vehicle
right.
that you're packed in a bit, and it can be quite bumpy. And so somebody can spend one day having a great safari and say, you know, I've seen what I want to see, and I'd rather chill out and read
right.
The next day or take a break. And others will just want to go out on every possible drive. And you can just, that way you can pick ones, you know, do I want to sign up for this one or not? And you're not constrained by so much budget. A favorite one of mine, if you visit Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe and Zambia, which is one of the world's great waterfalls, of
Absolutely.
Course, they offer a day tour to Chobe National Park in Botswana. You spend about an hour and a half driving by bus over the border, and you spend half a day on a boat seeing more hippos and elephants than you'll ever imagine. You have lunch in a nice lodge. In the afternoon, you're on the SUV seeing giraffes. You might see some lions, and you're back in your hotel by 5 or 6 p.m., and you've spent maybe $120 to $150 a person for the entire thing, all the permits, the whole process. And after that day, you'll know exactly what more safaris you want to do anywhere, and are you going to go out the next day for something, another park, another experience, or is it, you know, that I saw that and that's spectacular and we move on.
Yeah, and I think what was great about the example when you brought up to me is that we really are talking about for my family of four, we're talking about measuring this experience in the hundreds of dollars for a day experience as opposed to thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we've got the cost to get over there, no question. But, you know, as you lay it out, we can find a reasonable hotel, something that we're comfortable with. And as you say, there are more affordable options. But I can take my family of four. I can stay in a nice lodge where I'll have some creature comforts that the kids will be probably more approachable with. I can have a great experience on potentially a boat and then with an SUV exploring the animals. And by the time I get back to my hotel that night with my lodging that night, I probably haven't spent $1,000.
Yeah, very much so. And I know you're a Marriott SPG kind of guy. The Protea hotel chain they have
yeah.
has all range of from basic to very luxurious. Their most luxurious hotels are called African Pride
mm-hmm.
Level, but they have all the way down to quite basic. And their award rates, and as well with the currency being down, their cash rates are very attractive. They have a park in Kruger, and even on a short layover. So if you're connecting in Johannesburg, like I was earlier this year, it was about 2 hours drive to the northwest, and it's just outside Sun City, which is their sort of Las Vegas of South Africa with a giant casino complex,
yeah.
water park. There was so much retail and water park that I had trouble. I had to ask actually where the casino is. So it's family friendly in that sense. And
yeah.
in the park right next door, I stayed at one of the park lodges in the park things. It was $90 a night for a private room, dinner that was a steak dinner
mm-hmm.
and the breakfast, and it was self-drive safari, and the park permit was $20-something.
Wow.
And that, because I had a 24-hour layover in Johannesburg and was able to do that. And I have to confess, I stopped at the water park on the way back, and I...
to cool off.
I can't resist water slides,
yeah.
so... and there were some intense water slides. You need teenagers. This is not little kid stuff, but there
that's
are little
awesome.
Kid things at Sun City. So, and that's incredibly affordable as well.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And I didn't come into this segment thinking that that these things were this affordable. And I've taken a new light out of this. I hope that the listeners as well, take away the fact that if you're saving miles and points and you can find a way to get to Africa, that safaris don't have to cost you $10,000, $15,000, that you can do it for a very approachable amount of money. And, having known Stefan for a number of years, I am absolutely sure that he would be happy to answer questions. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not on the podcast if they do have questions about how to put together their first safari.
I'll add in one totally different, unexpected one.
Yeah.
You said if they're getting to Africa. So if they're getting to Asia, there's a lot of safaris that people don't realize. You're in Kuala Lumpur or somewhere. You can fly to Medan, Indonesia, and Air Asia for like $20, an hour flight, and an hour or so from the airport, you can be seeing the orangutans.
Oh, wow.
Very cheaply. So it's not just Africa that you can have these encounters. And the mountain gorillas and the orangutans are both some of the most incredible experiences I've had in terms of wildlife encounters. So it's there can be safaris in quite a few places, and Miles and Points travelers have a way to do all the miles and then figure out something cool on the ground. But my blog is Rapid Travel Chai. The Twitter, Facebook, Instagram are all that same account, Rapid Travel CHAI. A Facebook group is called Every Passport Stamp that discusses a lot of these destinations. And I look forward to hearing about all the incredible family safaris you've taken.
Oh, I can't wait. And Every Passport Stamp on Facebook is a great place for you folks to start if you're looking to find a way to explore some of these faraway places. Stefan, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Can't wait to have you back on again.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
While we're taking a quick break from the show, I wanted to let you know about our monthly Amazon gift card giveaway. Each month, we're going to give a $50 Amazon gift card to one of our mailing list subscribers. As long as you stay subscribed, you'll have a chance to win each time we have a giveaway. We'll always send you the best travel info, and we'll never sell your email address to anyone. You can subscribe right on our homepage, milestogo.boardingarea.com. Back on the Miles to Go podcast for another It's a Big Deal segment with Jen from Deals We Like. And one of the things that pops up for folks who only want to carry a couple of cards, maybe don't want to carry a ton, are, what's a good card to carry all year long? And Jen did a post recently on the Discover It card, which, in certain cases, and certainly for the first year, can be a great card to carry. Jen, you outlined what the bonus categories are going to be in 2019. So for somebody who's picked this card up, they've got opportunities in certain categories to earn 5% cash back each quarter. Let's walk through what folks can earn in 2019 if they want to hold on to the Discover It card.
Sure. So the Discover It Cashback card is a card that will simply give you cash back, which is great for your everyday purchases. And every year they change the categories of where you'll receive 5% cash back every quarter. So the categories you saw in 2018 are different than the categories that were recently announced for 2019. And so the 5% cash back is only on purchases up to $1,500, but that will still get you up to, $75 per the quarter, which is great.
Yeah.
So for quarter one, it's grocery stores. And for most folks, grocery stores are definitely an everyday purchase, at least in my household. So while spending $1,500 over the 3 months might be challenging, many grocery stores sell gift cards. So you can go ahead, purchase a gift card for either the grocery store and then use it, throughout the year, or find a third-party gift card that they might sell on one of those, rotating racks that twirl around. So maximizing this category should be pretty easy to get your $75.
It's funny because I feel like, even with everything that I know in the miles and points world, there are certain things that smack me in the face at certain times. And I don't focus on the Discover It card all that much, but I think about, I buy a lot of gift cards from office supply stores for my ink cards. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, it never even occurred to me for folks in this sort of category to buy gift cards from the grocery store, which sounds like I'm, stuck in a cave somewhere. But it's an easy tip to score that $75.
Absolutely. I mean, not all grocery stores will sell gift cards. You definitely have to check out your local grocery store to see, what they sell. But there's many out there that absolutely do sell gift cards.
Awesome. So what's next up for quarters two?
Sure. So for your April, May, June timeframe, you're going to be looking at gas stations, Uber, and Lyft. And if you live in the city, and don't have a car, most likely you'll be going the Uber Lyft route. And if you have a car, most likely you'll be going the gas station route. So I like that they kind of took in consideration everyone's driving habits for the most part. And, you know, this is probably an easy way to earn the $75 back too. I know Uber also sells gift cards on their apps. And while I haven't yet tried it, that should trigger the statement credit based on some reports I've read. So if you're not going to spend $1,500 on Uber over the course of 3 months, which is a lot of money, I think,
yeah,
you might be able to purchase gift cards and then they just stay in your account and then use it throughout the year.
Yeah. And for this one category, you're talking about, you know, Costco's sort of my go-to card. And one of the reasons is because of the 4% on gas. So this isn't even a percent higher than that, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
All right. So where do we go from there?
Sure. So now once we hit the summertime, July, August, and September, you're going to be looking at restaurants. And for those who eat out a lot or take clients out, hitting $1,500 probably isn't a problem. This doesn't have to include your fine dining restaurants. It can be, you know, your Chick-fil-A during lunch or Dunkin' Donuts in the morning. So all spend throughout the 3 months will kind of trigger that in the restaurant category. Now, again, to maximize it, if you're not going to spend $1,500, I mean, I personally don't, but if you're not going to, you can go to your favorite store, purchase a gift card, and then again, use it, you know, throughout the year.
Yeah, good point.
So purchasing gift cards, I guess, is going to be my key theme of this podcast. So just a way to maximize it, and especially, you know, don't go out and buy a gift card if you're not actually going to eat at that restaurant later on. Don't spend money for the sake of spending money, only if you actually will use it. But
for sure,
it's a good way to, you know, save that 5% cash back throughout the entire year, not just that one category, one quarter.
And so how do we round out the year with a Discover It card in 2019?
Sure. So this is by far my favorite, Amazon. So at the end of the year, as we hit, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, those shopping for their holiday purchases and everything else, you're going to get 5% cash back on Amazon. And as we all know, Amazon sells a slew of gift cards, not only to Amazon, but to many, many third-party merchants. You don't have to leave your house. This is, I mean, everyone should be maximizing this category if you have the Discover card during the months of October, November, December.
For sure. And, you know, this past year too, we had the promo where if you had American Express membership rewards, mm-hmm, or Chase Ultimate Rewards points, you could earn cash back from Amazon as well, or discounts from Amazon via your cards. And I think there's just, you know, in that fourth quarter, there's so much focus on that sort of stuff that, you know, gift cards can absolutely be your friend here. We, you know, we picked up some gift cards to max out that American Express offer this quarter to get to our $500, because a bunch of the toys that we bought for our kids from Amazon weren't sold by Amazon, so they didn't qualify for the 20% discount. But, you know, we're going to go see, you know, a couple of movies here and there and stuff like that. And, you know, got movie gift cards and all that, makes it super easy to hit those numbers.
Absolutely. Amazon even allows you to send a gift card, you know, as a holiday present to a friend, family member, if you want. And you can even time when it's going to be sent, and that will qualify for the cash back as well.
Oh, I didn't think about that. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then if you're new to Discover It, while they don't have, you know, your traditional sign-up offer, their sign-up offer really is that any points earned over the course of the year, or 12 months, I guess, of when you apply and get approved, will be doubled.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the first year of the card can be a real powerhouse.
Absolutely. So you're looking at, you know, 10% cash back at those categories if you're a new card member,
which is just awesome.
Yeah. No, nothing better than cash back in your pocket, right?
Well, especially at numbers like 10%. I mean, just to be clear to folks, it's really hard to get that sort of value consistently from your points. Certainly we've all got, at least us, you know, nerdy travel hackers have stories about being able to get like unbelievable value for our points. But in reality, 10% back is going to beat what you're going to use your points for pretty much every single time.
Totally. And when people give those really high, you know, 10 points per dollar valuation, that's usually on, you know, a price point that they would never pay for. So
right.
So whether, you know, whether or not they're really getting that value is, you know, up for debate.
Yeah. If you were never going to buy a $5,000 business class ticket, it probably shouldn't be worth $5,000 to you.
Right. Exactly. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not hopping on the podcast with me.
Sure. Thanks for having me. You can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com. Send me a note at dealswelike@gmail.com and via any of the social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anything at dealswelike, you'll find me.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch, Jim. We'll have you back on again soon.
Thanks.
Hey guys, hope you enjoyed our best of show. No two pennies this week, as my voice is pretty much given all it's going to give for today. We'll be back next week with a full new show. Until then, we've got miles to go.